Good morning, everyone. Can everyone hear me well? Okay. Welcome to Welcome to First Reformed Presbyterian Church of Beaver Falls to our seminar on caring for the aged. We're glad you're all here. Just a couple, items of housekeeping before we begin. There will be a break roughly midway through after Margie's first presentation, at which time we invite everyone to go over to the fellowship hall down the hallway, if you're not familiar, on the other side of the building and the lower level. Our fellowship hall, where we my tongue's not working this morning. where we will have refreshments, snacks, and beverages. We have the official donut of the Reformed Presbyterian Church in Beaver Falls area. That is the Orem's Donut, which I think it's a required snack when we have an event in this area. There's also a couple tables over there, and a couple of our ladies will be giving you information if you're interested in the RP home. So avail yourself of that. We also have some pamphlets from the Agency on Aging that on another table over there. So please welcome. You're welcome to take advantage of those items. Anyway, the plan is to be done around noon. So there will be question and answer sessions after each of her lectures. So please hold your questions till then. Margie Hemphill, I guess many of you know Margie. Margie served as the administrator. She worked at the RP home for 18 years and served as administrator there for 12, from 2001 to 2013. She is now retired. She is a registered nurse, and she is highly qualified to speak on the subjects that she's going to cover today, so we will be very well-informed. She is married to Bruce Hemphill, a retired RP pastor whom many of you know. And I'm wondering when they're going to take that long-distance cross-country motorcycle excursion. I keep expecting that. Anyway, so without further ado, Margie, welcome.
I'd like to open with prayer. Father, let the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Thank you for this opportunity. And I pray that the information that I'm able to give today will be of help to the people that are here and will be of help to the congregation as they think about how they should minister to the elderly. Thank you, Lord, for all of your wisdom. In Jesus' name, amen. So, as I was fooling around with the computer this morning, every time I do one of these, something doesn't go exactly right. So yesterday morning, in that period of time just before I was waking up, I had a dream. And in this dream, I turned on the computer and realized I didn't have my projector. And so wherever I was running all over creation trying to find a projector so I could start. And I woke up in a panic. So I hope that this goes better. The computer is working so that I don't have to worry about that. Each time that I'm asked to present this material, I am very, very happy to do so because I think it's a big area of need, and I think it's an area where the church needs to have a broader idea of its mission in caring for the elderly. This is not an easy subject. It's not easy to be a caregiver. When I first started giving these, I was talking about mostly the people that were receiving care. And the last two or three I've done, I've changed my focus. So I'm talking about what it's like to be a caregiver, because I think it's one of the hardest jobs on earth. And because of my background, my biggest focus is on people that are suffering from Alzheimer's and other dementias, because that adds a level of difficulty to caring for people that you don't necessarily have when you're caring for somebody that has just a physical disease. And so you'll see that that comes out. And so if you're here as somebody that cares for a child with a disease or an older person whose mental faculties are there but they have a physical disease, this won't exactly fit what you're dealing with. But hopefully you'll get some information that will be of value to you. So as we start this, the verse up there, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. Being a caregiver isn't simple, and it's as difficult as the individuals for whom you care. So there's nobody that's the same. No situation is going to be exactly the same. And so the congregation, if you have a caregiver in your congregation, you need to be aware of the kinds of things that they're dealing with so that you can help them carry those burdens. My objectives for this, caring begins for the church in the household of faith. Caregiving can't be done alone, and that is something that I need to stress over and over and over again. You cannot do it alone, and you shouldn't try to do it alone. And planning for old age is a necessity. So as I look over this group here, I don't see any, well, yes, there are some really young people in the back there. But most of us are older, and so we need to be wise in how we plan for our own old age, and therefore make it easier for those who will care for us later on. So, caring for the elderly is a complex subject. In the United States, it's often true that we say, I'd rather do it myself. We're very individualistic. We don't want to admit that we need help. But that is something I think as Christians that we need to get out of our minds and our hearts, because God never intended us to work alone. He intended us to be in a congregation, working together, helping each other. Being a caregiver may involve different situations. It may be a single daughter caring for her mother or father. It may be a parent who has young children at home also caring for their mother and father. It may be a neighbor who's going in to help somebody who is alone and needs to have somebody overseeing some of their care. So it is, there are many, many different situations where caregiving may be involved. So we're going to look at who are the caregivers, what issues do caregivers face in providing care, and why should the church care? $44 million Americans, 21% of the adult population, are the caregivers. 80% work in long-term care. 66% of those people are women. Most are middle-aged. 13% are equal to or greater than 65 years of age. And 59% of the informal caregivers also have full-time jobs in addition. 10 million of these women who care for people have chosen to take care of somebody with dementia. So this is a very big burden. Who are the caregivers? They are also adults caring for relatives, spouses, middle-aged parents caring for severely disabled adult children, adults caring for friends and neighbors, and children caring for a disabled parent or a grandparent. There are unpaid caregivers, and they are the spouses, the children, the grandchildren, relatives, and friends. And then there are paid caregivers, and they are the nurses, the aides, the therapists, the social workers, companions, people that actually make this their life's work and so are paid for the job that they do. Now, what are caregiving duties? This is interesting. Caregiving duties don't just involve 24/7 care. Caregiving duties can be grocery shopping, house cleaning, cooking, shopping, paying the bills, giving medicine, taking care of the activities of daily living like bathing, using the toilet, dressing, and eating. But you may say, well, I'm not really a caregiver. All I do is take my mother's garbage can up to the top of the driveway once a week, or I do grocery shopping, so I'm not really a caregiver. But the studies show that if you're helping with the basics of living and you're not just doing a visit to be social, then you are doing caregiving. So that encompasses an awful lot of people. There are rewards for being a caregiver. If you've had a really good relationship with your parents as you're growing up and you really appreciate the care that they gave you when you were young, then you have feelings of giving back to that loved one. And that can be broader in the family too, aunts and uncles, anybody that may have given you help when you needed it when you were younger and now they need help. You feel good about that. You're giving back to them. That may provide a stronger relationship with a loved one. If you've lived far away from your parents as an adult, and then suddenly they need care and you bring them to live with you or put them someplace close to you so you can be close to them, you may get to know them in a way that you didn't know them as an adult. It gives you a better appreciation for life, because as you see these people declining, you can understand how good it is to feel the way you do. And so your appreciation for life is enhanced. And it can give you, especially as a Christian, a sense of fulfillment in following God's commands. So these are some of the rewards. But let's go back. Yeah. There's also stress involved with caregiving. So you might see frustration and anger. You know, we don't always have good relationships with our parents when we're growing up. And so if a child's been in a relationship that was abusive and then as an adult is in the situation where they have to be the one that's the caregiver, that's a very difficult situation. And frustration and anger often are part of that. There may be guilt involved because I promised Mom I would never put her in an institution and I couldn't take care of her anymore. And so now I'm going against that promise, and there's guilt that's there. There can be loneliness, because as you take care of somebody that requires 24/7 care and you don't have somebody to help you, you become isolated. So loneliness is something that can cause stress. And exhaustion. And this is especially true of somebody that's caring for somebody with Alzheimer's disease or other dementias, because as their brain disintegrates, their time isn't the same. So they may get 20-minute naps here and there, and then they can be up all night. You don't get those 20-minute naps during the day because you're still doing your thing, you're still doing your caregiving, and so then exhaustion sets in as you deal with these situations. So that affects your health. I want to add a little bit there to this stress situation. If you can understand what this is going to mean for you going into it before you actually start, it helps. And so I'm just going to lay out some things here that you need to think about if you have the possibility of becoming a caregiver, or if you haven't thought about it, you're already in the situation. Especially if you're taking care of somebody with dementia, your loved one may live for many years. Average life for a person with Alzheimer's disease is from 2 to 20 years. So the life expectancy, you may be going into this thinking, oh, it's not going to be all that long that I'm going to have to keep giving this care, but becoming a caregiver is a long-term serious commitment because it could be many years. The demands of caring for an Alzheimer's patient also will increase because the disease does not get better. It always gets worse. And so the demands on you will get worse. In the early stages of the disease, you may spend 14 hours a week on average taking care of somebody with Alzheimer's. But as the disease progresses, it becomes a full-time job, and you're spending at least 40 hours a week, and it may be 24/7 that you're spending. Caregiving will affect your job. And many times, people who start out with full-time jobs when they become caregivers have to give that job up. So that will affect your finances. Because if you have to give up your job and you're not bringing in an income, then that seriously affects your ability to live. Being a caregiver for somebody with Alzheimer's will also affect your family. And you may have children and you may want to protect your children from all of these demands, but it isn't possible to do that. And this isn't necessarily a bad thing, because your children then learn compassion and they learn what it means to give up their time and what they want to do. And that's what God wants us to do when we bear one another's burdens. He doesn't want us just to be interested in what I can do for myself, but how can I care for other people? So your children are learning that as they watch you. You can't be a caregiver alone, and you have to ask for help. You know, we use the verse, it's better to give than to receive. And we go through life saying it's better to give than to receive. But what we don't remember is that if there isn't somebody who's receiving, then somebody can't get the blessing of giving. And there comes a time when we have to be willing to receive help. And I know when Bruce's mother was declining, and I would go and I would do something for her, she would apologize every single time I did something, because she was taking up my time. That's kind of hard to take as the caregiver, that every time you do something for somebody, they're going to say, oh, you shouldn't have to do this. Yes, I do. I should. So that apology needs to get out of the vocabulary also. And caregiving requires skills. So if you don't have those skills when you begin, you will have to get them. You'll have to learn them. If you've never helped somebody take a bath, you will have to learn how to do that and how to get around the objections they have to you helping them. If you've never helped somebody eat who can no longer remember that they have to take a fork in their hand and put it to their mouth, you're going to have to learn these things. And especially when you're taking care of somebody with dementia, caregiving isn't intuitive. What would be logical isn't always the best thing to do. So those are some of the things that you need to think about as you consider what it means to be a caregiver. So from there, we're going to go to effects on the health. People that are caregivers, and you would say as we go through this, oh, no, 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 I'm a Christian, I don't have these kinds of problems. Well, let me tell you, this is not true. And God will work through you to teach you lessons that you need to learn as you go through some of these difficulties. But they are difficulties that you need to deal with. People that are caregivers, more likely than the general population, are going to be depressed or anxious. They are more likely to have long-term medical conditions. They may have those conditions when they start, but because they're under stress, because they're may not have the finances that they need, because they don't have the time to take care of themselves, those conditions can go downhill and are more likely to be more serious. And when you're under stress all the time, one of the things that the body does is it releases the hormone cortisol. And that is a stressor on the body. And when that level never gets any lower, you are really hurting your body. And studies have shown that a person that's been a caregiver for somebody with dementia is likely to die within 4 years of ending that situation, because there has been no ongoing care for themselves. So it is a serious situation that you need to be aware of. As you don't take care of yourself, you have a weaker immune response. That means if you have a wound, you bump into a table and you have a cut on your leg or something, it may take longer to heal. There's higher level of obesity, because there's less likelihood that you're going to have a good, well-balanced diet. You're going to use frozen dinners and fast food and things like this, and you're not going to be getting the exercise that you need, and so obesity is at a higher level. There's a higher risk for mental decline, including memory and attention deficits. Here you are taking care of somebody that has mental decline, and the caregiver also will have a higher risk for some of these things. And again, the increased risk of dying within 4 years after caregiving ceases. A lot of this happens because of self-neglect. So you're less likely to take good care of yourself. You don't have time. You're less likely to fill prescriptions because of the cost. You're less likely to get regular tests like mammograms. You're less likely to get adequate sleep because you can't. You're less likely to cook healthy meals, and you're less likely to get physical activity. So, what are indications of caregiver stress and burnout? Just the feeling of being overwhelmed, not being able to cope. That's an indication that burnout is occurring. Too much or too little sleep. Both of those can be indications of depression. Gaining or losing a lot of weight, feeling tired most of the time, loss of interest in activities one used to enjoy, being easily irritated or angered, and always worried. These are not the things that are happening to the person for whom you're caring. These are the things that are happening to you as the caregiver. So you need to be aware so that when you begin to experience some of these things, you get help. Often feeling sad. You know, when you're isolated, you don't have the friends that you used to have that are visiting or that you can go out and visit. You can't do things with these friends. There's a feeling of sadness. And as you watch somebody that you love declining, it's very difficult because you remember that person as being vibrant and productive, and here you're watching them go downhill. The personalities are changing. They are not the person they used to be. And it makes you sad. So that leads to frequent headaches, body pain, or other physical problems. And sometimes people self-medicate. And so this is when they begin to use or abuse alcohol and drugs, including prescription drugs, because they just feel so bad they want to get rid of that feeling. So what are methods for reducing stress? And this should be in great big capital letters with exclamation points after it, ask for help. And that is so hard for us to do. We don't want to admit that we need help. I can do it myself, but you can't. So you need to ask for help. And asking for help doesn't just help you, but it may help the person for whom you're caring. So you need to involve relatives, friends, church affiliation, community agencies. If you have somebody at home that has dementia and you can get them into an adult daycare situation where they can go out for 8 hours a day and give you a break or even allow you to continue working, this is a matter of helping that person also because it gets them out. They get more stimulation. They have friends in that kind of a situation. So that's a good thing to do. And then it also then gives you a chance to recharge yourself. So ask for help. So how can you do that? Well, make a list of the ways that you can use help. Okay, I need to get out and walk. But I can't do it because I can't leave my mother alone in the house. It's too dangerous. Ask for somebody to come, even two or three people. Could you come 1 or 2 days a week and give me an hour so I can go out and take a walk? I can walk with your mother in the house. I can do some kind of activity with your mother in the house. But ask somebody to help you with that. Ask somebody to either shop for you or sit with your loved one so you can go out and shop. I love to go to the grocery store. And so that's something that, you know, it's a release. So ask for help. And if you are the person that is being asked to help, be willing to do it. Be willing to give up what you have planned. So, I'm dealing with this right now. So, you know, they don't always fit into your schedule when they ask for help. They have doctor's appointments, or they have medication that needs to be picked up, or they just need something done that they can't do, and they call and they say, can you help me with this right now? Well, I had a plan to do something else, but yes, I can do this. I can drop what I'm doing. And so it is self-sacrifice for to be the one who is giving the help. But that's pleasing to God. And then stress reduction. You need to learn to say no if you are the caregiver. Because there are things that you may have done all your life. You may have been the one to have everybody come to your house for Thanksgiving dinner, and you made the majority of the meal, and this is, everybody just expects it every year. But if you're providing care 24/7 for someone, you need to say, I'm sorry, I can no longer do that. Will somebody else take over that responsibility? That same thing can be true of Christmas time, New Year's Day, all of these holidays where we tend to get together as families, maybe something that you can't do anymore, so you need to say no. And you need to say no to people in the church when they say, can you be on this committee? You need to be wise about whether you are picking that responsibility up or not, if you can do it, because it's going to add stress. And what you need to do is lower the amount of stress. And then you need to give yourself a break. There is nobody that's a perfect caregiver. There is nobody that can take care of somebody with difficult needs who never gets angry, never gets depressed, never becomes anxious. Those things occur, and you need to admit them to God. You need to say, would you please help me with this? You need to say to others, I need help with this. But you don't need to beat yourself up because that's happening, because you're human and it is going to happen. If you read through the Psalms, the psalmist often had feelings of not being perfect, and that was okay with God. God listened. So you need to know what your limitations are. So you identify what you can and you cannot change. You are not going to be able to change the person for whom you're caring. This is just, they are incapable of changing anymore. Their brain is disintegrating. You can't say to them, you were so rude. I think you need to apologize. They will not understand that. And all it does is make them more anxious and more upset. So you can't change them. You have to change yourself sometimes. So know that. Set realistic goals. What am I going to do today? Don't have so many things on your list to do today that when the end of the day comes and you look at that list, you get discouraged because you weren't able to do them. And so prioritize, make lists, and establish a daily routine. And when you're caring for somebody, especially with dementia, that daily routine is very, very, very important. They need to do the same thing at the same time every day. That gives them a little more stability. And it gives you the ability to say to somebody that you're going to ask to help, this is what my mother does at this point in time. This is what she needs help with. It's always going to be the same thing on Tuesday. So establish a daily routine. And then fight isolation. So you need to make the effort to stay in touch with family and friends. And here is a way that social networking helps. Because you can get on Facebook and you can tell your friends what you're dealing with. They can respond to you. You can look at that and still be aware of what's going on around you and doing the things that you need to do. So it's a little bit easier to stay in touch with people today than it was 20 years ago. And so you need to make an effort to stay in touch with people. Join an Alzheimer's support group. And I can't stress that enough either, because as you interact with other people who are going through the same kind of situations that you're going through, it's going to give you a sense of, I'm not alone in this. There is the Alzheimer's Association in Pittsburgh has a telephone support group that meets every Thursday afternoon at 2 o'clock. And so a whole lot of people call in, and so then they discuss. They bring things up for discussion, and everybody puts their two cents in as to how they dealt with this particular problem. And so you're talking to people who may have solved a problem that you're having now and you don't know how to solve, but this is also something that's very, very positive in your life as a caregiver. Make a plan each week to do something you want to do. Go to the library. It's quiet. Nobody interrupts you. If you want to read, you can read. If you have your computer, you can take that with you. If you just want to sit there and do nothing, that's a good thing to do. But make a plan to get out of your house, ask somebody to come and sit with the person for whom you're caring, and just recharge yourself. And then you need to take care of your own health by engaging in physical activity, eating a well-balanced diet, getting rest, and seeing your doctor regularly. And again, you can't do that unless you get help. So don't be afraid to ask for help. And then as you're taking care of somebody with dementia, some things are really funny. Go ahead and laugh. Otherwise, you'll cry. But sometimes the things that they do and say are just so funny, you don't want to laugh in front of them. Go around the corner, do it, you know, without making any noise, but laugh. Laughing enhances the endorphins in your brain. It will make you feel better. You know, I have example after example after example of what people did while I was caring for them. I'm not going to share those with you right now, but if your mother or your father does something that's just totally out of character and is ridiculous, laugh. The Bible has a lot to say about caring for people, and it gives direction in decision-making, comfort in individual times of crisis, and strength as we bear one another's burdens. And so I'd like to just share with you some of the verses that I've discovered in the Bible that helped me understand the aging process and what God requires. First of all, God requires honor, that we honor older people. Rise in the presence of the aged, Leviticus 19:32 says, show respect for the elderly and revere your God, I am the Lord. You know, when I was a child, if an older person walked into the room, I was required to stand up, offer them my chair, and be quiet. I don't see that happening today. But this is something that the Bible tells us we're supposed to be teaching our families. The bottom line for everything we do when we consider the subject of caring for the elderly is honor. And God requires it, and it's our duty to obey that command. Proverbs 16:31, gray hair is a crown of splendor. It is attained by a righteous life. Proverbs 20:29, the glory of the young man is their strength. Gray hair is the splendor of the old. And 1 Timothy 5:1 and 2, do not rebuke an older man, but exhort him as though he were your father. So again, these verses require us to honor the aged. Ephesians 6, 1 through 3, all of you know those verses. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long here on the earth. There's a promise with that, that long life comes along with obedience of parents. And it doesn't say honor your mother and father if they deserve it. Sometimes they don't deserve it. They haven't earned it. They have treated you abysmally, but God still requires us to honor our parents. Old age, the Bible says, is the reward of an obedient life. In Genesis 15:15, Abraham was assured by God, "You, however, will go to your fathers in peace and be buried at a good old age." Exodus 20:12 tells us that honor of father and mother will result in a long life. Rewards, Psalm 91:14-16, "Because he loves me, says the Lord, I will rescue him. I will protect him, for he acknowledges my name. He will call upon me and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life I will satisfy him and show him my salvation." And then we see that God's covenant promises are given to the elderly. In Isaiah 46:3-4, it says, "Listen to me, O house of Jacob, all of you who remain of the house of Israel, you whom I have upheld since you were conceived and have carried since your birth, even to your old age and gray hairs, I am he. I am he who will sustain you. I have made you, and I will carry you. I will sustain you, and I will rescue you." What a promise. Psalm 71 is called the prayer of an old man for deliverance. In this psalm, the psalmist praises God for his righteousness and faithfulness, and then calls on God in his time of need. Psalm 92:14-15 is God's promise that the elderly will still bear fruit in old age. And that fruit may not be physical. My mother turned 97 on September the 26th. My mother never expected to be 97 years old. She grew up in an orphanage. Her nutrition as a young person was lousy. You know, she just always expected that she would not live to be an old person. And here she is, having outlived so many of the people with whom she grew up, the people in her family. She is not able to do anything anymore physically. She can't really walk. She can't carry on much of a conversation, but she loves everybody. And everybody that comes into her room, she makes a comment, like, it may be a simple thing like, "Oh, you have such pretty teeth." But she always has a positive thing to say to people. She is always reading her Bible. So anytime people come into her room, that's likely what they're going to see, her reading her Bible. This is bearing fruit in your old age. So it doesn't mean that you have to be like you were in your 40s and 50s. God uses these things also. So what about the church's responsibility to the elderly? And I think this is an area where we really need to get more serious. It's going to be more true as time goes on that there are more elderly to care for. And I think the church needs to have a plan of how they're going to meet that. And there are some people that are gifted for doing this. The Holy Spirit has gifted them to be caregivers, to be people who look for things that they can do for the elderly or for the caregivers. So those are the people that need to step forward and have a plan. So the church needs to be the vehicle through which honor is demonstrated to the elderly. Galatians 6:10 says, "Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers." So the church does have responsibility in this. 1 Timothy 5:4-16, in these verses, it clearly instructs the family in its responsibilities for care of parents and grandparents. So we're taught that the family has primary responsibility to care for its elderly members, but the church has a responsibility to teach families that's their responsibility, because sometimes they don't know that. They don't understand that. And they need to be, the church needs to be teaching people to be obedient to God's word in this area. James 1:27a, "Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress." And it's not just orphans and widows, but this is a principle if you have an older gentleman who needs help today, that's something that comes under this. They need help in their distress also. When James wrote this, widows and orphans were without help. If a widow didn't have children to take care of her, then she didn't have any way of being cared for unless the church did the job. But there are a lot of people that we need to look at today and see their needs. Deuteronomy 16, 11, and 14, God instructs the church in these verses that widows and orphans are to be included in the community life of the church. So we should make sure that the elderly in these categories are not excluded, that when we make plans for things that the church is going to do in getting together, that there ought to be a plan made for the older people. That may mean if it's at night, you go pick them up because their eyesight isn't good anymore. They shouldn't be driving at night. It may mean that you look at your building and say, okay, how have we made this handicap accessible? It may mean changing the lighting in the room because people have cataracts and they can't read anymore. It may mean having a good PA system so people can hear who are having difficulty hearing. There are a lot of things that the church needs to be aware of if they are going to be ministering to the older people in their communities. Church's responsibility continued, Psalm 146, 5 through 9, Psalm 147, 3 and 6, James 127, and you need to go home and look these up. All list people for whom God provides special care. So in these verses, we have the oppressed, the hungry, prisoners, the blind, those weighed down with trouble, the brokenhearted, the wounded, and distressed widows and orphans. So if God is concerned about all those people, that also needs to become a concern of the church. Now, a lot of the verses that we see in the Bible have great promises attached to them about old age. And we sing, and in old age when others fade, their boughs with fruit shall bend, they shall be hale and hearty still. And then we go and we look at our parents, or we look at those that we're caring for, and that's not true. They're not hale and hearty. What's going on? Well, the Bible also talks about the trials of old age. Psalm 71:9, old age is called a time of reduced strength. In 1 Kings 1, 1 through 4, David is always cold. And I don't know if you have made the observation that it can be 95 degrees outside and my mother wants a sweater on. Well, the hypothalamus in the brain, which controls temperature regulation, as you get older, it becomes less effective. And so people feel cold even when it's hot. And we shouldn't make fun of that. We should give them a sweater. We should cover their legs with a blanket. David needed to have a young woman assigned to him that would lie beside him to provide body heat. And so this is one of the trials of old age. In Genesis 27, 1, Genesis 48, 10, Ecclesiastes 12, 1 through 7, you find verses that speak of poor eyesight, loss of hearing, weakened bones, loss of teeth, insomnia, and loss of the ability to enjoy the pleasures of life. So there definitely are trials that are connected with old age. So what does God desire for the kind of care that we should give? Isaiah 58, 6 and 7. Is this not the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry, and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter, when you see the naked to clothe him, and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood? That's God's desire for the kind of care that we should give. Now, in the United States today, there are 35 million geriatric persons. I should have taken that word out and put it in persons instead of patients, but geriatric is defined as over the age of 65. So there are quite a number of us in the room that are over the age of 65. We are geriatric. By 2020, there will be an estimated 53 million Americans older than 65. 6.5 million of these will be in the old category of over age 85. We are going to be experiencing just being inundated with the elderly and with the care that they need. So we need to think about some things. And those of us who are over that age of 65, those of us who are over the age of 50, we need to have a plan for what we are going to do for our old age. So how do you make decisions about how your loved one should be cared for, especially when they don't want to be cared for? What kind of services are available? Do you know? Do you know where to find them? How will expenses be handled? Does a house need to be sold now or later? When should children step in as the parent or guardian of their parents and maybe override what their wishes are because it's better for them? Do you remember when you were young and your mother wanted you to do something that you didn't want to do and she said it's for your own good? Well, that comes up again at the end of life. It's for your own good. And we didn't like it as young people, and our parents don't like it either, but it's for their own good. So you don't want your family scrambling to find documents during an emergency. You need to think about these documents: an advance directive, powers of attorney, funeral plans, insurance policies, bank accounts. Those are things that if you have a parent who hasn't told you where things are, they get to the place where they can no longer remember where those things are, and suddenly you have to provide those documents, you are scrambling. You don't want that to happen. You don't want that to happen to somebody who provides care for you. You don't want that to happen for you when you're doing the caregiving. So you need to have, you need to get serious about it and do something. You need to inventory your assets. And you need to know where those things are and make a list. Include the name of your doctor, your accountant, your insurance agent, financial advisor, lawyer, with their telephone numbers, and have it someplace where it's accessible, where somebody can find it and know where those documents are. Make a list of passwords for your computer and for all of your multiple electronic devices. If you have everything password protected and you haven't let somebody know where those passwords are, they're not going to be able to find this information, and it will be terrible. You need to compile a list of medications if you're on medication, especially if it's important medication that you need to take every day at a certain time. That list needs to be kept updated. It needs to be someplace where your children can access it if something happens to you, and they need to be able to tell somebody what medications you're on. You need to prepare an advance directive. You need to do that. You need to have one, and your parents also need to have one. But it's very important to think about this ahead of time before it becomes necessary. And I have an example of two documents here that you can use. And I guess the other one's in the trunk of the car. Anyway, this one's called Five Wishes. And it was started in Oregon, but it is it matches the laws for the land in 40 states, and Pennsylvania is one of them. And it's a way of going through and just asking you questions, and you, as you answer them, then you come up with a plan for what you want for end-of-life issues. Now, an advance directive is only used if somebody is terminally ill. If two doctors say this person has less than six months or less to live, then an advance directive can be put into effect. So it's not something that just is, helter-skelter. Anybody can use it that wants to use it. An advance directive also can be changed anytime you want it. For 15 to 20 years of my nursing career, I worked in intensive care. And I saw people who changed their advance directive every 8 hours, depending on how they felt. So it's not something that's set in stone. If you say you don't want it, that makes it null and void. And so it's not something that you need to worry is going to be there and is going to override your wishes if you don't want those things anymore. You know, I used to say when I was working, I want do not resuscitate tattooed on my chest. If my heart stopped or I stopped breathing, I didn't want anything to be done. Now, you know, as I get older and I think about that, I may not be as strong in that, but if there is no likely possibility that you're going to get better, and you're a Christian, and you're a Christian, and you want to go to heaven, why would you want everything done? Why would you want to be put on a ventilator? Why do you want a pacemaker at 95? You know, some of these things you need to think. If you do want them, then your advanced directive can say that. I want everything to be done that can be done. I worked in Philadelphia where there was a large Jewish community around the hospital in which I worked, and they were terrified to die because they didn't believe there was any life after death. And so this was still at a time before you got kicked out of the hospital 3 days after you were admitted. They would want to be put on ventilators, and sometimes they were on for 3 months at a time before they died. So you need to think about what do I want as far as end-of-life situations are, because your wishes need to be followed. And if you have not made an advance directive and you become not able to say what you want anymore because of disease, if you have a major stroke, if you have dementia and you are no longer able to speak for yourself, if you haven't written one of these, if you don't have it written down, the law says everything has to be done. If you haven't said what you want and you have a family that doesn't agree, it sets up a fight. And I have seen over and over and over again families fighting over what's going to be done to mom and dad when they come to the point of death. And so an advance directive is a really good thing to have. A power of attorney. There are two parts to a power of attorney. There is a durable power of attorney, so somebody can make financial decisions for you if you can't make them for yourself. And there's also a power of attorney that lets somebody make medical decisions for you if you're not able to do that anymore. And if you haven't done an advance directive, but you have a power of attorney, that person can make medical decisions for you. But it's really good if they know what you want. So, suggestions for congregations. You need to, as a congregation, congregations need to be taught to have a deep respect for the needs of the elderly. Maybe this is something that sermons could be written about and preached about. Physical disability often limits what an elderly person can do. So again, if you're going to be a helper, you need to step in and help them, take them to their doctor's appointments, get them out, take them grocery shopping. All of these things are things that physical disability may keep them from doing on their own. You need to be available to help elderly people in and out of church. At Covenant Fellowship, our building is not very handicap accessible. We have a ramp that people can walk up to and maybe push a wheelchair up to get into the sanctuary. Bathrooms are not handicap accessible. They have to get out of a wheelchair to get even through the door. So, you know, those things are things we need to think about, and they cost money, and that's usually the reason we don't make those changes. But it is something that we really need to look at seriously. We need to, as younger people, slow down our rate of speech. As our brains age, we do not comprehend as quickly as we used to. So if somebody is speaking very, very rapidly, we may not be understanding what they're saying. And the brighter lights. It's nice and bright in here. But brighter lights are needed for those whose eyesight is not as good. And then emotional needs. People don't talk to you about the things they're really feeling unless they trust you. People don't trust you if you have not spent a lot of time with them and you don't know them. They won't tell you how they feel or what they're suffering. So emotional needs require a relationship, and it takes time. But this is something that I think as congregations we need to be aware of. And we need to take maybe several people need to take one person that they're going to spend time with on a regular basis and get to know them so that they will, the person who needs to open up is able to. Spiritual needs. One of the things that people often cannot do anymore when they have dementia is read the Bible. They can't, they just can't read anymore. So just sitting on a regular basis and reading scripture to somebody is going to be of great benefit. If they've been somebody that has read their Bible all their life, that's long-term memory. That's going to be there. And so they will hear that and they will be able to call that up. Provide recordings of sermons. And that doesn't mean you take a CD in and hand it to them and say, here's last Sunday's sermon, listen to it. They can't, maybe don't have a CD player. If they do, they don't know how to operate it. And so it means spending some time, because it means going and sitting, you putting the CD in and listening to the sermon with them so that they can hear it. And then praying with and for the older person. I think it's really valuable for a person to hear you praying for them and speaking to God about their particular needs. That's really something that you can do for an older person who's no longer able to do that. And then simple things like remembering your older friends with gifts and cards on their birthdays and other important holidays. We've gotten to the place that if we send an email card, that's good enough. But that's not good enough for the older person who was used to receiving cards in the mail and used to receiving little gifts. It's important for them to still have those kinds of things. But remember that the greatest gift that you can give to the elderly is yourself and your time. One of the things that we're going to be looking at as we get into the next section is the fact that how the brain works, but long-term memory. Different areas of the brain operate with singing, with music, and with speaking. And so when a person can no longer speak, you'll take them into church at the home, and they don't have a book, they can't read, but you start singing a psalm that they've been singing for years and years, and they can sing it. So that's something to keep in mind when you're going to visit an older person. Singing the psalms with them is a wonderful way to keep that scripture alive and let them use the memory that they do have. Now, the other side of this is the person that is the caregiver. If someone in your congregation is caring for an elderly relative, you need to show concern for that caregiver as well as the person receiving the care. You need to provide regular breaks. You need to pray for them. You need to pray that God will give them the strength so that they can provide the physical care, emotional care, and the patience to keep going 24/7 when they're caring for somebody. And I have a letter from a friend. When I first started doing these seminars, I was always coming from the institutional side of things as I was talking about dementia. And so I had a friend who was taking care of her parents in her home, so I called her and I said, would you be willing to share with me what it's like for you to be caring for your parents at home? And this is the letter that she sent back to me, and I'm going to read it to you. And I want you to just, remembering the kinds of things we've talked about, think about that as I read this. Dear Margie, I was actually excited about your request to share what it's like to care for an elderly parent in our home. I am hopeful that my experiences will be helpful to someone else who is walking along the same path. It's also nice to have someone interested in what has been a major part of my life. My husband and I had always hoped that if needed, we could provide room and care for our parents when they got older. My parents came to be with us when my mother's health declined and Daddy needed help. We hadn't really counted on both of them needing help at the same time, but the Lord knew the future, and we were able to make our plans to accommodate both. Mother lived with us briefly until her mental agitation grew to be so great we felt she was beyond our ability to keep her safe. She passed away after a brief 2-month struggle. My father continued to live with us. We converted our unused dining room into his bedroom. He was alert and tracked quite a bit of what was going on around him. However, his dementia and depression made him a shadow of his former personality. He was not able to walk, feed himself, or care for himself in any way. His careful financial planning made it possible to have daily care for him twice a day, as well as some extra help for me around the house. I was not prepared for the major responsibility of being executrix of my mother's estate and having power of attorney for my father. For several months, it was equivalent to a part-time job. My father had been a meticulous record keeper, but my mother had had to take over that responsibility the last several years before she died. Their finances were secure, but scattered to say the least. As a result of that experience, my first word of advice would be to do all you can to help your parents have these things in order. I know it can be difficult when they still want control. Encourage them to seek help from a financial counselor they can trust. I enlisted the help of a Christian financial counselor who was a huge blessing to me and made a huge difference. The next greatest hurdle was securing of good, dependable care for my dad. The agency I chose proved to be just short of a disaster. The parade of aides we saw in the first 2 months was mind-boggling. Instead of being helpful and taking the workload from me, I found myself training new people every other day. Or the opposite would happen. The agency would send the same person day and nights in a row who was not only unprofessional in her behavior, but my whole family felt themselves bracing for her visits. Thankfully, the Lord graciously raised up people that I was able to hire privately. They were loving, Christian caregivers that were a much better mix for our family. It was still difficult sometimes to arrange schedules, keep track of hours, and get everybody paid on time. However, it was far superior to the agency. I am not saying there aren't good agencies out there or good aides who work for bad agencies, but this was my experience. All that being said, as thankful as I was for them, their presence was by far one of the hardest aspects of having my father with us. It was difficult for me to have someone in my home with me every morning of every day and sometimes at our dinner table at night. No exception. There were times I would have liked to be alone in my house with my family and not be watched. It was difficult to always be up and polite to an outsider. I would like to encourage people who know of families caring for elderly in their home to be supportive and interested. I got a lot of people who asked me, "How is your dad?" But only one or two ever asked, "How are you?" I wonder if it was because they knew I had paid outside help and that meant I'm all set and have no problems. Even with the AIDS care, I still had my dad's laundry, medications, doctor's appointments, doctor's bills, taxes, finances, AIDS schedules, etc. My children were still at home also, which was a bit of an oddity, since people in this situation often have older children and are older themselves when their parents reached the point mine were in life. I would also like to encourage the siblings of families caring for aged parents. to be as involved as they can. I realize that decisions for care are arrived at in many different ways. I was never pressured in any way by my siblings to care for Daddy. If I had not wanted to, arrangements could have been made for him to be in an institution. I have to be careful what my expectations for my siblings are. However, any support, encouragement, help, and love they offer is greatly appreciated. I confess when I do not feel that expressed, I struggle with my attitude toward them. The church also has some responsibility, I think, in showing care to the aged parent and family who are caring for him. My dad was far from friends he knew for over 30 years in the church he pastored. I thought of him as an alien in a foreign land, a pastor without a pastor. The Lord taught me a lot through this experience. I believe he blessed me because I was made to trust and obey God in a way that I might not have otherwise. It also gave me a greater appreciation for my husband and children who were so helpful and never complained. We have all had to think less about ourselves and more about others. My greatest blessing, however, was knowing that it was Christ who sustained and strengthened me each day. Without his help, pity, and comfort, I would not have been able to do it. And on that note, are there any questions? Yes. Okay. Leviticus 19:32.
Medicare decisions that apparently we have to deal with every year now, according to changing needs and changing insurance companies, et cetera. So I suppose there's some places for us to get help with that.
Yes. In Pittsburgh, the organization is called Apprise. There would be a place here in Beaver Falls, Beaver County, that has people that is their job to go and show all of the insurance policies that are available in the area and what each one covers. And, you know, when you're talking about Medicare D, the
that's
prescription
drugs.
Coverage, you know, they will show you all that and they will walk you through it step by step. They actually will come. You can find somebody. One of those, you have to go to them. But there are insurance agents who will come to your house and sit down with you and go through all that.
So they'll come to your house
and they don't charge
as
you
many years as you need for both yourself and your aging parent.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah,
it's something that can happen every year if you need it. You just need to ask every year.
Now, if your parent is on medical assistance, the government decides which program that they're going to go into, which one pays for most of their drugs or whatever. And you don't need to change it every year. It fits your circumstances, and you can keep the same plan over and over again until it becomes maybe too expensive and you want to change.
Right.
There's not a lot of difference between the expenses.
Okay, thank you. And one more thing that I thought of is, as a church, when we have fellowship events, one thing a lot of modern-day parents apparently don't think about is teaching their children not to run. And also to maybe be a little more quiet. But I can definitely recall telling young children, and maybe Stephanie recalls this, along with my children and her brother, being told to stop running because they could knock an older person over. They could cause someone to fall. And just kind of training them to realize that, you know, it's not all about them, but they need to be careful of these older people that they probably don't even know. but to be considerate of other people. And I think that's something that I'm concerned with. How do we teach our persons who have young children to teach their young children? I have stopped children from running, but...
Maybe this is something that Sabbath school teachers could do. Maybe a pastor could preach a sermon on Leviticus, honor, you know. I think it is something that isn't talked about as much as it used to be, and so it's something to encourage people in the church that have relationships with children, and they need to be told over and over and over again. It's not something they're going to be told once and that they're going to buy into. They don't want to. But parents need to be taught that.
Exactly.
So, but it,
how we teach the parents without them feeling we're messing in their, you know, bailiwick, that we're being, I mean, even though as a congregation we do vow that we will pray for our members.
I would take take a person aside and take the Bible in this verse and sit down and say, you know, did you know this verse was in the Bible?
Okay.
Because a lot of people don't.
Okay.
And say, I would like to ask you to consider that in the way your children are behaving here in church. But
thank you.
It has to be done with a great deal of kindness.
Thank you for that.
Any more questions?
I just have a question about that five wishes form that you have. Is that downloadable? Do you have it?
Yeah, I think so. I think you could download it. Back and see. Yeah, there is a email address on the back of this that you could look at and do. The other form that I have is an advanced directive form that was put together by the Bar Association and the Medical Society in Pittsburgh, and we used it at the home. They may still use it there, I don't know. But if you can get lawyers and doctors to agree on something, you usually get a pretty good thing. But it also walks you through. But it doesn't have, this one deals with what you want as far as your faith. That one doesn't. But both of them are good as far as saying, okay, in the event that I have a terminal illness, this is what I want. And ask questions and you fill out the answers.
Any more questions? All right, then I guess we'll take about, a 20-minute break at work? How much time?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry?
At least 20 minutes.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll let you know when it's time to get back up here. Get over there, enjoy your...